Hello and welcome back to the Relationship Matters podcast. We believe relationship matters, from humanity to nature to the larger whole. I'm your host, Katie Churchman. And in this episode, I'm talking with senior faculty member at CRR Global, David Wickender, about the importance of listening to understand in our relationships. Across this conversation, we discuss, what does it mean to really listen? What leads to us feeling misunderstood or unheard in our relationships? The impact of energy on our listening. The importance of timing when it comes to listening. And creating skillful behavioural contracts with our partners about when and how we listen. David Wickender is a senior faculty member with CRR Global, certified with Team Diagnostic and a certified coactive coach. David's approach is systems and relationship orientated, whether he is working with teams, couples, or individuals. This approach holds that we are always in relationship, whether the relationship is to the many aspects of ourself, the relationship we have with others in our personal life, or the relationship we have within a team or organization. Part of what David brings to his coaching is an immense diversity in education, training, mentoring, teaching, leadership development, and workshop leading, as well as developing and operating several highly successful businesses. He adds to this his own lifelong personal and spiritual growth path. So without further ado, I bring you David Wickender, talking about listening to understand in relationship. Hi, David. Welcome to the Relationship Matters podcast. I am so delighted to have you on the show today.
Oh, hi, Katie. It's great to be here. It's good to see you.
And today we're talking about listening and listening to understand.
Yeah.
And this is such a fascinating topic for me because I feel it's one of those skills that seems simple, but it's not easy. And so I wanted to start by asking you, David, what does listening to understand mean to you?
Yeah, to me, it means really focusing on, like, I really want to understand what you're saying or what you're expressing. Even underneath the words, because there's the words, but just like, what's really going on? Like, how are you feeling? Or what are you really wanting to get across? That way, as a listener, that's the stance I would take.
And I think many of us are often listening to respond. As you said that, it was making me think how we're often thinking about our next thing as opposed to actually listening.
Yeah. And also it kind of goes along with trying to convince, which is also, I mean, when you look at how most of us grew up, all of our role models, books, movies, you know, what's out there, it's oftentimes, maybe even usually, trying to convince. I want to convince that I'm right, or convince that my point of view is the correct one, or whatever. And rather than like, let's understand each other first. And both of us, I mean, because it's important, obviously, that it goes both ways.
You're right. It doesn't seem to be natural to us. And I'm sensing that our way of listening is often pushing out, actually, our ideas, our stories, our assumptions, as opposed to really pulling.
Yes. In fact, that's a bit, that would be a signal if one person or both are just keeping constantly pushing out, like, you know, my point of view, this is what's going on. Let me tell you, that's certainly a signal that people are not feeling heard or understood. I oftentimes ask, you know, my clients, do you feel understood? And I'll ask them both, you know, and most of the time they'll say, well, sort of, or no, pretty much, you know, and if it's pretty much, well, what's the part that you don't feel understood? Or if it's no, which is often common, and then I'll ask the other person, and they usually say no, or some version of that. So then, okay, we need to do this differently. You guys need to have this conversation in a different way.
Mm. Well, I know you do a lot of work with couples, David, and I'm curious about the patterns that you see, because I think many of us think we're actually quite good at listening, particularly in the coaching industry. I think we go back to our personal lives and we presume, I've got listening down. I mean, I'm a coach. So what do you see unfolding in sessions that might help us to become more aware of maybe where we're not listening properly?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. It seems that Well, I guess, again, it's like really looking at, do you feel understood? I mean, that's because so often that's the case. People don't feel understood. Whether you're a coach, I have many of my clients have been coaches, and I'll ask the same thing of them, and they typically don't feel understood or feel understood to an extent. So there's more work that needs to be done there. The other thing is, it's not complex, but that doesn't mean it's easy. Because how many years have we gone on just trying to, let me tell you what's going on for me. Let me convince you, pushing out like that. We've had so many years of doing that. It's hard to create a shift where we like, okay, let's pause. Let's slow down. Let's listen to understand. And let's do that. Make sure that that happens before we go into any solution or anything else.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating, isn't it, how we simplify it? And it is simple, as you say.
It is,
but I think because of that, it's missed. And I did this leadership workshop with some high-level leaders in an organization, and they really, really struggled with active listening.
Yeah.
They almost felt like they weren't doing enough. And I think our way of listening quite often is pushing out, but it's also relying on the brain's mechanism to presume and preempt and jump in, as opposed to holding space.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of a tool that my wife and I have, what we call it, holding the basket. And that's not necessarily good for couples that are in conflict with each other.
Okay.
Because that takes a pretty skillful couple to use this tool. But it's really helpful. Like my wife and I use it all the time. For things like one of us comes back from our work or something like that, or something else is going on with the family, with kids, who knows, doesn't matter. And it's like, so holding the basket is, it's kind of a signal in a way. It's like, could you hold the basket for me? You're like, I want to let out some stuff. The person who is, quote, holding the basket, their job is just to hold space. But it also is a signal that, okay, if I'm the listener, I don't want to take on what's going on with my partner or whoever it is I'm listening to.
Yeah.
Could be at work even. But I don't want to take it on because that's not my stuff. I want to be there for my partner, but I don't want to take it on. And that's where the basket is. You imagine the basket's in between you. So that whatever the person says is going into the basket and not taking it on. So that can be helpful. I've had some clients that actually use a basket, use a real basket. They put it in front of them.
It's brilliant. After learning this tool off you, it made me aware of how, well, firstly, it gives agency to both the listener and the one being listened to. And I didn't realize how often I just expect, particularly my husband, to just listen to me. I come in and I just dump my day on him.
Yeah.
And I haven't even asked if that's okay. Are you in a good space to listen? And then when I'm not listened to, I'm annoyed because, well, why aren't you listening to me?
Exactly.
I think that's a fascinating design. It's a mini DTA in a way, isn't it? Can you hold the basket?
Exactly. Can you hold the basket? You know, and sometimes, like with my wife and I, sometimes one of us will just start, you know, kind of acting like we have made that agreement. So the other person sounds like I'm holding the basket for you.
That's great.
And then we just say, maybe let's just say it was me that was, you know, having something to say or vent or clear or whatever. Then I might say, oh yeah, is this okay? Or is this a good time? And then there's yes or no. But yes, about asking permission, is this a good time? And if it's not, then let's just talk about when a good time, maybe in 10 minutes, as soon as I finish this, or, you know, I'm really busy till later, you know, whenever that is.
Yeah, I think until this tool, I felt like active listening should just be a part of everyday life, which would be wonderful, but we only have a certain capacity.
Yes.
And if we've been very busy all day with clients, it might not be that we have that space then to be as present as we'd like. And so
yes.
What I like about this is then you can say, actually, no, but could we go for a walk tomorrow morning and discuss it then?
Right. And the other thing is, like I was saying, it's kind of because of that, well, just the language of it, it also says like, it's a reminder as the listener, it's like, oh yeah, this is not my stuff. So I don't need to, I don't want to engage it in that way. I just want to hold this space. And it's really about, the other thing is it's about contacting the person's emotions first, or in this case, just letting them get it out. It's not about fixing. And that's also super common. You ask some of the common things with couples, and not just couples, but with teams too. It's like fix, 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 solution, solution, solution. And, you know, we want to feel, people want to feel understood. They want to feel heard, seen, understood first.
Yeah.
Then we can go to solution.
Well, that's very, it resonates for me because I am able to listen in a certain way with my clients. And yet, I don't know if it's because I care even more when it's my husband or family members.
Yeah.
But there is this desire to jump in and fix. And this tool helped me to become aware of actually, no, they just want me to hold the basket. They don't want me to fix anything. I am just there as a space holder. And that is my role.
Yeah. Unless the person who is, you know, not holding the basket is kind of like getting it out.
Yes.
They say like, you know, I could really use some help with this. But, you know, usually it's, let me just get it out first. And then you, maybe you take a breath, like, oh, okay. Do you got any ideas about how I could work with this? Or could you help me with this? Or I'm struggling with this. And then there might be that. Or maybe it's like, let's, tomorrow I'd like to talk about going, how to move forward with this. But it's always about the person who is speaking.
Yeah.
That they're the one.
Well, oftentimes there aren't those questions, though. I actually think we probably offer our advice up way more than we're actually asked for it.
Oh, yeah. Really common. I mean, that's one of the things. People go to solution really quick, and then the person doesn't feel understood or not completely understood. They just go to solution. And it's, I mean, even with our clients, like our business clients, with teams, working with teams, you know, so often they just like, let's just get a solution.
Yeah.
And, you know, most or many, I don't know most, but many of the worst tools and skills that we teach, they're about creating more awareness and understanding first before going to solution.
Yeah. It's fascinating how powerful this can be. And I think going back to what I said before about that leadership training I ran, where everyone struggled with listening and felt like they weren't doing enough. I think sometimes when we're really actively listening and just holding space, it can feel like we're not doing enough. And yet it can be so healing.
Absolutely. You know, and it kind of goes back to what I said already is that, you know, people want to feel seen and understood. And when that's not there, I mean, here's an example. So there was a dental procedure that happened for me. Just, it was a minor one. I didn't like the way the dentist, because it was just like shaving a tooth after he had done some work and he shaved the tooth. And I wrote him an email letter. And I said, like, I'm feeling, you know, pain, da-da-da-da-da-da. And felt to me like you were rushed and, you know, and you were pretty aggressive. And, you know, anyway, I said a few things. I sent it to him. Zero, nothing, no response. About 3 weeks later, I sent him another update, said, well, it's finally starting to, the pain is starting to diminish, still there a little bit. And I got a very short little response from him this time. And it just said something like, well, that's a good sign. Looks like it's healing. That basically that. Never addressed some of the things I said in that original thing. Like I felt he was rushed. I felt he was very aggressive with his drilling. No, I don't feel to this day, I mean, this just happening currently. I mean, I do not feel seen or understood by him. Or maybe he does, but he didn't address it. So what's the impact of that? I feel less trust.
Yeah.
Like I have this like, I don't know if I can trust this guy. Whereas I used to feel trust with him. So it's hurt the trust. And I feel, of course, more distant. I mean, that's just a non-personal relationship with, like, how often do I see him? You know, very seldom. And you can just imagine with more personal relationships, it erodes trust. It creates more distance. If we don't feel like my partner really, oh, yeah, I feel my partner understands me. That feels good. my partner doesn't.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't necessarily even mean they have to agree. It's more about that alignment piece in relationship. He could have just said, I'm sorry you felt unheard. And it's not saying that he agrees that you are unheard. He's just saying, I'm sorry you feel that way. And it honors your primary.
Exactly. In fact, that's a beautiful way to say it. You know, it honors, and you know, it's kind of an Orsk, you know, lingo, but the primary is what's going on or what you're primarily feeling in that moment. So yes, it honors the primary. And that is so important too. It's like, oh, I get it. Mm. I get it. I understand. Yeah, I don't agree with you. I wasn't rushed, or I didn't feel I was aggressive, but I get that you did. Okay. I relax more.
It's amazing how something so simple like that can completely transform a relationship for better or for worse if we miss it or we include it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I'm wondering about how you feel our energy impacts the way we listen or not, because I've been playing around with the idea of, well, meta skills comes to mind. And meta skills for me are very much the energy with which we come with to a conversation or a communication.
Right.
And I wonder how you feel this can impact the way we show up in our relationships when we're listening, because certain energies or meta skills might have a different impact compared to others.
Sure. Yeah. Well, certainly, well, somehow it's important to say for the listener in this example here, that, or for the person who's speaking, that they feel that the listener is really present and engaged and curious and wanting to understand. Like, I really want to understand what you're saying, and I'm not going to what I'm going to say next or my response or whether I like it or agree or all that stuff. So I think that's really important, to kind of that meta skill of being really present, really focused on the other person, and the desire to understand. I really want to hear what's going on for you.
Yeah.
It's just so, I mean, it's simple. It's silly, easy, but it's simple.
Yeah. And we can be so unconscious about what we bring sometimes. And I notice if I've had a very task orientated day, and I then try and listen, even though I've got all these listening schools and tools under my belt, I don't listen in the way that I really want to. If I bring openness, now that's very, or curiosity, now I'm listening differently.
Yes. Right.
But if I'm task orientated, I'm trying to tick the box.
Well, you know, that reminds me of a client I had once. It was a couple, and the guy worked in investments, like, you know, on the market, and his job was trying to convince, you know, like, we should do this, we should invest in this or not invest in that, you know. So you're right. So if we're in a place where we're task oriented, or whatever we're doing, had been doing, or maybe our job is, if that's really different than that kind of space of like, oh, let me just be here with you, that's a hard transition, or it can be.
Absolutely.
So for this guy, it was, it's like, I remember saying to this couple, I said, like, look, let's say his name is Joe, you're all day long, you're doing this, you're trying to convince people about, you know, to make this investment. And now you come home and you're talking with your wife. It's like, of course you're going to bring some of that energy into it. Like, of course.
Yeah, because it serves you really well in that other system.
Exactly.
But it's not necessarily the most useful energy for listening in that deeper way.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
And I'm sure many of us do this because we feel we've learned how to listen, and yet we're not really thinking about how we listen, which I think is as important as what we're doing when we're listening.
Well, yeah. And one of the other things that it's a little more, maybe a little bit more subtle, but it's same kind of thing, where if I feel that, like, let's just say my wife's talking and I feel like, oh, I understand. And I'm just going, I got it. You know, it's like, I got it. Yeah. Well, if she doesn't feel understood, or there's more that she wants to say, it's a little off-putting. And maybe I do understand. You know, so it's not about that. It's not about whether the listener understands or doesn't, but it's really about, does the other person feel understood?
Mm.
And so let's be really present to them. It's like, okay. I mean, I could say, like, yeah, I get it, you know, but how we say that also makes a difference.
Yeah. And I think we sense that on maybe an essence level. there were these studies done about how even if we're nodding and smiling exactly as we should in a conversation, the other person knows when we're not really listening. And so we can't fool people into thinking that we're present with them. And I think many of us think we can because we're multitasking while we're on a Zoom call.
Right.
But we know, we sense it at some level when someone's with us and when they're not.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So I'm curious about some of the ways we can upskill ourselves as listeners, particularly in some of those intimate relationships. So with our families, with our partners, because this is where it often matters the most, but sometimes where we can bring our most unskillful selves.
Right. So what came to me as you said that was so often when we're in personal relationships, but again, it applies to teams as well, there's a complaint or a criticism.
Mm.
And it's so easy to get defensive when we hear a complaint or criticism that kind of points towards us. If we have this enough of a presence to go like, okay, what is it? What's underneath that? You know, in one of our worst tools, we call it dream behind the complaint. I just like to use the words like, what's the longing behind the complaint or criticism? What's the desire? And so that's another thing I really talk to clients around, couples, but really any client. It's like, so what's underneath it? What is it that you're really wanting? Because if you talk about that, or if you go for that, like say as a listener, so what is it? I hear that you're upset about something, but what is it that you're wanting? What is it that you're longing for? That opens up a different kind of conversation than, I mean, maybe you need to hear the complaint first, maybe. But ideally, if we can look at what's underneath the complaint or criticism and work with that, that has a much more productive conversation.
I think from this conversation, David, I'm coming away already with the idea that listening is an essential skill set for alignment. And I think I've always thought about other tools being more for alignment. You need to do more in order to create alignment. But actually, when we really listen to understand, we're sort of leaning towards alignment naturally.
Oh, yeah. 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 Definitely. Yeah. Because what's underneath that complaint, there, it's like, oh, I get that. I'm with that. But if I hear it as a complaint, it's like, ah, and it's hard to get aligned when I'm feeling it. The person is feeling criticized or blamed. But if they can feel like, okay, what's underneath that is this longing for whatever it is, X, Y, Z. And that's where we can find alignment. And that's why, you know, the Landswerk tool, which for people that are not horse trained, it's about empathetically understanding, like not just understanding with one's head, but understanding like what's really going on for the person around a particular topic or focus. And from that greater understanding, then, and understanding has to go both ways, of course, understanding each person. And then there's that lens of how are we going to work with this given our differences? Because of course we're going to be different.
Yeah. Of course we're going to be different. And I think there's maybe an assumption, particularly with couples, that because we're a couple, we think the same.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
and then we fall into patterns and they're not always the best patterns.
Yeah.
And I think, well, the work we do, particularly in OSC, it gives us the opportunity to choose different patterns, particularly in our partnerships.
Right.
Because I wonder around, particularly with couples, when you've been together for so long, the brain has this amazing mechanism to obviously fill in the blanks, you could say, in terms of our surroundings. We're not always taking in every sensory stimuli, otherwise we'd be overwhelmed.
Right.
I think the challenge can be, though, is particularly with people we know well, we can just suddenly assume we know who they are and we know what they're going to say and we kind of switch off because, yeah, we've heard this one before. And how can we wake up and be more present with them so that we see them as emergent beings or the emergent beings that they are?
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing. I mean, in a way that kind of opens up to a broader, you know, one of the things that, you know, my wife and I used to lead trainings or workshops for couples. And one of the things that we would start off with is this statement of everything that you think, say, or do is either going to have us feel closer or farther apart. And so even thinking, even, you know, my thoughts about us, it's either going to bring us farther apart or closer together.
Wow. That's a really powerful thing to think about.
Yeah. And if you really reflect on that, I think that at least for us, we've like, yeah, that holds water. That's true. And so the question is, do I want to feel closer? Do we want to feel closer together? Or do we want to, are we okay with distance? Maybe it doesn't matter. But for most couples, at least the ones that come to, they want to get some sort of counseling or coaching or therapy or whatever, they're wanting to feel closer. So then what's going to have us feel closer? What's going to keep that spark alive? And so we have a lot to explore.
And do you find that listening to understand is often at the core of that?
Well, it's certainly an important part of it. Absolutely. It's definitely important. Because if we don't do that, then the more things that where people don't feel understood, it lingers in the space between. And the more we have in that, the space between that's unresolved or not just like it clogs, you know, it just clogs our connection, gets in the way. And if we do that constantly day in and day out for years, which is pretty common for a lot of couples, then with those habits, you know, then there's a big space between us. And so oftentimes couples come in with like their relationship is flat because of years of whatever, not having the relationship be a priority or not knowing how, then there's a lot of stuff in the space. So it's like, yeah, things are flat.
I find couples fascinating, both in terms of my own relationship, but also the couples I've worked with. And there's something about, particularly in our intimate relationships, we seem to fall into these patterns either we've inherited or we just make up as we go along.
Yeah.
And we don't tend to prototype and say, actually, this isn't working. This isn't great. We just sort of accept it. And that becomes our narrative maybe for the next 50 years. I wonder how you help couples to redesign, because I'm sure you've worked with couples who've been together for a long time. And actually,
yeah,
it can be hard to shift out from some of those hardwired neural pathways.
You could say. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I say to couples is, you know, how long has it been, this pattern, say, going on, whatever it is that's creating some distance, how long has that been going on in your life? So, you know, it's not like just like the Wizard of Oz kind of thing. It's like, oh, okay, now you have, you know, hearts, you know, or whatever. Now you have intimacy. No, it doesn't work like that. Mm. You know, it's like it takes time and attention and practice. And so over time, I think we can create some shifts. But first, we need to have awareness of what are our patterns that we're doing. And, you know, again, and using the ORSC language, reveal the system or reveal the relationship to itself. What are the patterns? What are the dynamics? Let's understand those, because then we can put some attention into those places that need, like, so like, okay, so as an example, so one of the things I ask couples a lot is both sexual and non-sexual intimacy, I might say, so what brings you closer or brings you farther apart? We could explore that for sexual intimacy, if that's what they want to work on, or we could explore that with non-sexual intimacy, if that's what they want to work on, or both. But it's that kind of question, what brings you closer together? What creates more distance?
And then, wow, that awareness, that gives them the choice then to choose to change it.
Right, to choose to change it. Yet, like, yes, we want to feel closer. Now we understand that we got these patterns that kind of keeps us apart, where we don't feel, you know, so there needs to be a desire for something else. And that's where a coach, a counselor, a therapist, whatever, who understands about these things can help them create some new patterns that will, or habits, whatever you want to call it, ways of relating that will get them what they want.
Well, it makes me think about my parents. They have a couple of friends, two different couples, and they always say about how mean they are to each other. They're in this long marriage, and yet they're often bickering and being quite nasty at times. And it seems like a lack of listening can sit underneath any of the toxic behaviours. So it can be a form of defensiveness, stonewalling, contempt, or blaming. And it seems like all of those can be manifested in this not listening, or this not listening to understand, at least.
Yeah. Well, this is a little bit different, but I just, as you started to speak there, I just had this flash memory coming into my thoughts where I used to be a whitewater outfitter and guide. And so I had, you know, quite a few guides that, you know, that worked for me, and we'd go off on river trips and we would have a lot of fun as guides. There was one little time where we started to do a lot of playing, teasing, which was really fun, but it started to grow, and that started to become the pattern. And I started to look at, well, what is that doing to our relationships with each other? It's creating a little bit of distance because we were doing it too much.
Yeah.
And a lot of couples do that.
They do.
They tease, they play too much, a lot, too much in terms of leading in a direction that they don't want. They want more closeness, but they keep teasing each other. And so they kind of stay in a little bit distant. And so I remember talking to that with all my guides and say, like, look, like, great, let's have fun, let's tease, play, all that kind of stuff, but let's be mindful about not doing it too much, because there's an impact, and the impact is creating distance, or at least it's not fostering closeness, which is what we want.
You're so right. And I think that's quite rife over here in the UK, where we have a culture of banter, which is, you could say, sarcasm.
Oh, yeah.
And it shows up in a lot of couples, young and old and middle-aged. And there's... you know, at surface level, it can be quite fun and light, but over time, it can become quite contemptuous, and it can erode away at that relationship. And I think this is what my parents see in some of their friends. It's actually quite nasty now. It's not funny, but it's been such a long time pattern that they can't really see it in quite the way it manifests.
Right.
And I just wonder if there was that layer of listening, how that would help some of these relationships that maybe are a little bit disconnected and have lost their alignment or are off course.
Yeah.
What might listening do to remedy that?
Yeah. Well, I think first we've got to uncover, we'll look at the pattern, you know, the dynamic between them and what they want. And then we can really start, you know, listening. Wait, let me hear what you want, you know, and of course, you know, I want you to hear what I want. What do you want in this relationship? And we can, those of us who work with couples or teams, can help to foster that conversation. So let's talk. What is it that, okay, you know, I guess you guys are teasing each other all the time. So what is it that you want? Do you want to feel closeness? Or like, what is non-sexual intimacy or connection? Like, what is that? What does that feel for you? What does that look like for you? And it might be different for each of them. Or maybe it's like, oh, we're good. We're living kind of parallel lives. That's cool. We're good with that. I mean, if it is, it is. Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
But I certainly think if they want something different, then they to develop more listening skills with each other is a huge step.
Because I guess as well, what we haven't mentioned is when we're listening, we're not just listening for the words, we're listening for what's not being said as well.
Exactly, yeah. And that's why... You know, when I do supervision for coaches, I always say, like, listen to what's underneath the story, you know, but that applies for those of us that are not coaches or counselors or whatever. It's like, what else is going on between us, me and my partner? You know, what's underneath our storyline?
So, yeah, listening really does. Yeah. Wow. It creates so much, doesn't it? So much awareness and then choice from that.
Yeah. And I like what you're kind of focusing, you know, bringing it back to this listening part, because there's, how do we listen? And we listen with our ears and everything, but there's also like I think you kind of mentioned earlier that we want to listen, like listen with our heart, listen with, you know, our arms open to like, let me just really hear and sense, like listen with all of our senses.
I don't want to sound dramatic, but in some ways, when you put it like that, it could be a spiritual practice, you could say, listening. Or a meditative practice, because you're so present with that person in front of you.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, there's many listening, or how to have a skillful conversation, basically. There's so many different models for that. And I think a lot of it, their theme and variation of like really being present with in that process and talking about self. That's the other thing. That's another huge thing. People tend to talk about the other person. And again, that's been modeled to us in books and movies and everything else, and probably most of our parents, you know, they talk about the other person. And that's really hard. I find it really hard for couples to really stay with talking about self.
Yeah. I'm not feeling heard as opposed to you're not listening. Very different impact. Yeah. It just reveals so much then about the patterns, and it allows for that relationship to show up. And there's that ownership and agency there that we get from relationship systems intelligence.
Yeah.
I'm curious, in terms of this whole conversation, David, reminds me of an Anne Dillard quote, "How we live our days is how we live our lives." I think listening is such an important part of this because it is so simple, so seemingly simple, but not easy. And so what is one tip perhaps you have for our listeners that can help them to bring more of this presence and then aliveness into their relationships?
Yeah. Well, as you started talking, I just had a little reflection. Started talking on that. And I was feeling like there's no way that I could, or I think anybody could be constantly present with our partner all the time.
No.
I mean, it's just, so if we have some boundaries, it's like, okay, I'm going to be in doing my thing or in my space. And then there are other times where, okay, now I want to be present. So if we really, I think having those boundaries can help us be more present too. Because otherwise it can be such a, you know, my hands are going back and forth. Like there's no boundaries of the two people. It's overwhelming.
Yes.
It could be overwhelming. And we don't want to get overwhelmed. So we're not going to be able to be present all the time. And that's where, like, is this a good time to talk?
Yeah.
You know, whether it's holding the basket or whether it's something that there's a challenge here in our relationship I want to talk about. Is this a good time? Maybe let straight out of Gottman stuff, is this a good time to have this conversation?
I found actually even putting a time on it, because I can sometimes go quite a lot at my husband in terms of like, I've got this topic we need to discuss, and that can overwhelm him. And so if we put a 5-minute time boundary around it, we know it's not this infinite conversation. There is an end.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to take over our whole evening. And I think that's really helpful, because then we can then be focused for that 5 minutes around this important conversation.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing I oftentimes say is like, shorter is more effective.
Mm.
Like if we say too much, the person could go, at first they're going like, well, okay, yeah, yeah. And then it keeps going on and on. It's like, okay, yeah. Inside I'm going, oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I kind of lost you there after a while, after 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But if we can say shorter things and just kind of make some pauses, slow down, and of course, talk about one thing at a time, it's also important.
I really appreciate this, David, because you're not saying, yeah, we should be actively listening all the time, because that would be impossible.
Yeah.
You're saying be conscious about when it matters.
Yes. And I think that's a great way to say it, when it matters. Because, you know, we're all humans and we're doing our busy stuff. Most of us are pretty busy. And you know, am I going to pay attention to everything my wife says? I kind of don't think so, and vice versa. But I want to be aware of when is it matters. Like, there's something here. Mm-hmm. And then maybe it's like, you know, I know it's important we talk a little bit, but let me just finish this first. Or maybe I can go right there and have that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Creating those, well, alliances around how we listen, when we listen together, so that it can be in alignment for our relationship.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of a whole other topic in a way, because so many of us have that solo lens, you know, and, you know, what's going to serve our relationship without giving up self? That's so important. Like, we want to stay true to ourselves, accept influence. How do we do that?
What's going to serve our relationship? Thank you so much, David, for this discussion. This was delightful and so insightful. I'm taking away many goodies from this conversation. So huge thanks.
Well, thank you, Katie. I really appreciate you asking me.
A huge thanks to David for that fascinating discussion. Here are my key takeaways. Listening to understand is when we're listening to find out what's going on for the other person, beyond the words they're saying. We move away from preempting and predicting, and instead, we're present with the other person and hold space for them. Holding the basket is a helpful way of creating conditions around when and how we listen in our relationships. For example, one partner might ask the other to hold the basket for them after a stressful day at work. By asking for permission, it gives the other person the opportunity to say yes or no, and also gives them a role. Their job is to simply hold the basket to listen for a given amount of time. They're not taking on the other person's stress, and their job is not to fix the other person's problems unless asked. They're simply listening and holding space. When we listen to understand and acknowledge how the other person is feeling, we honour their primary. We honour what is going on for them, what is true for them, and this can help the other person to feel seen and heard in the relationship. Listening to understand helps us to get beyond our differences, to go beyond our storylines, and to be present to the emergence that lives within each of us and our relationships. For over 20 years, CRR Global has accompanied leaders, teams, and practitioners on their journey to build stronger relationships by focusing on the relationship itself, not only the individuals occupying it. This leads to a community of change makers around the world. Supported by a global network of faculty and partners, we connect, inspire, and equip change agents to shift systems one relationship at a time. CRR Global's unshakable belief is that relationship matters, from humanity to nature to the larger whole. For more information, please visit crrglobal.com.